Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. Over the past 20 years or so, legalized gambling in the United States has expanded dramatically as governments around the country have embraced gaming as a way to generate revenue. Now, the problem with that, says our guest for this hour, John Kent, he's professor of business administration at the U of I, he says the problem is that money spent in casinos is money that is not spent in the consumer economy. In fact, he goes on to make the argument that gambling weakens the economic engine that drives defense spending, and ultimately, gambling is actually a threat to our national security. This morning in this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking a bit about government's addiction to gambling and how it is perhaps that governments don't really get what they think they are getting. And our guest is indeed John Kent. He's someone who has been writing about gambling and its effect on governments and on government revenues and on society. This is something that he has been writing about and has been speaking about for a long time. It's often quoted in the media on the subject, one of a number of scholars who have contributed to the work that's been done on the social impact of gambling. And we'll talk about all of that here this morning in this part of the show. Questions also are welcome. People who are listening, call in. The only thing we ask is that callers just try to keep it brief in their questions, comments, so we can keep moving and get as many callers in as possible. But anyone who is listening is welcome to call 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, there we go. got your microphone on. Good.
Good. I got cut off already, huh?
Yeah. As a way to start, maybe as a bit of background, can you talk a little bit about how gambling, legal gambling, has in fact increased?
Well, that's a great question. We can go back in history and we can see back in 1976 we had a report on whether or not casinos should be allowed into Atlantic City. And this was a federal report, federal commission, and it was very negative on gambling. And then we had this huge explosion of gambling in the 1990s. And our former U.S. Senator, Paul Simon, a liberal, along with a conservative senator, Richard Lugar of Indiana, and many others, sponsored the U.S. National Gambling Impact Study Commission. And it came back with the conclusion that there should not be an expansion and there should be a moratorium, a prohibition on the expansion of any type of gambling anywhere in the United States because of all the socioeconomic negatives. They even called for the recriminalization of slot machines convenient to the public, and casinos are 90% slot machines. They called for increased restrictions on gambling on the internet, which was illegal under federal law already. They called for all kinds of prohibitions and restrictions. And there were a lot of gambling people from Las Vegas who were on this national commission. So we had this federal commission that made all these negative comments about gambling. And yet here we are in Illinois proposing in Springfield to expand gambling, to put gambling in video lottery terminals and video gambling terminals at the racetracks, to put it on certain types on the internet, exactly the opposite of what the U.S. National Gambling Impact Study Commission recommended in 1999. And we now have a 2009 report, three volumes, 3,000 pages, the Red Report on Gambling, the U.S. International Gambling Report, which confirms what the Federal Commission said 10 years ago. So we've got the academics, we've got the federal commissions saying this is lose-lose for everybody, and we've got state governments out there doing just the opposite.
Yeah. And not only do we have more opportunities, we have casinos, we have people talking about putting slot machines into bars and so forth. Actually, at the congressional level, there are some people who are saying that internet gambling, which is now illegal, but we know people in the United States are doing it, they're saying, well, we ought to take the opportunity to tax that, and why don't we legalize internet gambling?
You know, you can always take something and you can say, well, we're going to give the money to charity or we're going to give the money to education. The question is, let's do a valid cost-benefit analysis. And when you do the valid cost-benefit analyses, and this is under sworn testimony before Congress, study after study, summary of all the reputable studies for the last two decades shows that the costs are at least $3, $4, $5 for every $1 in benefits. You're actually losing jobs when you bring gambling in because that takes money out of the consumer economy. And so it's lose-lose for everybody except the special interests who are sponsoring the gambling, and they are getting enormously wealthy off of this. Let me just say one thing. We're talking about tax increases here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. The Edgar administration, Governor Jim Edgar's administration, finally raised the taxes on the casinos that were already here when he became governor. And the Ryan administration then lowered those taxes. The Blagojevich administration has been lowering those taxes. The taxes are going down on the casinos. We can get billions of dollars just by taxing the casinos we already have. Why raise everybody's state income tax when we could raise $3, $4, $5, $10 billion by just starting to tax the casinos?
Yeah, and here in the state of Illinois, one of the things that has been proposed, had been proposed to generate revenue was, well, let's have another casino license. And some people said it's going to bring in hundreds, just the bidding for the rights, somebody will come along and pay us hundreds of millions of dollars just for the license.
Yeah, well, let's back up on this and look at this historically. Right. If we look at when the original 10 licenses came to Illinois at the end of the Thompson administration, Governor Thompson's administration, and the license fees for each of those casino licenses was basically $25,000 per license. Now, the fair market value of each one of those licenses was about $500 million. That's a $5 billion giveaway to special interests right off the bat, $5 billion. So don't talk to us about raising taxes when you're giving away $5 billion to people. And most of the owners were from Nevada. I mean, the money's getting shipped out of the state of Illinois. So this is simply outrageous. And it's continued for the last more or less 20 years. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just right off the bat. What else is happening? Well, when people are dumping $2 billion, $3 billion a year into these casinos, most of that money is leaving the state. But the other downside of that is that $1, $2, $3 billion is not going to buy cars, refrigerators, computers. And studies have shown that around these gambling facilities, people are spending 10% less on food, 25% less on clothing, 37% have raided their bank accounts to gamble. This is lose-lose for kids. Where's that food coming from? Where are those losses in clothing and social amenities coming from? Mm. People are doing that instead of taking care of the necessities of life. And so you're creating these enormous social problems. But when that money goes into these casinos, you have the lost consumer multiplier effect. And we're losing sales tax revenues. We're losing a valid and vibrant consumer economy. We're changing it into a gambling economy. And if the current proposals in Springfield go through, we will have more gambling in Illinois than there is in Nevada. We will be the number one gambling jurisdiction in the country. It won't stop there.
If you look at the amount of money that, say, people – it's just in the state of Illinois, how much people spend on the lottery and how much people spend in casinos, all of these legal gambling opportunities, how much is that?
Well, it's in the billions. And there is some discrepancy about how much is actually being spent. But $2 billion leaving the economy per year would be a conservative estimate.
Okay, so people are spending $2 billion, and of that $2 billion, how much of that ends up in the general fund of the or otherwise in state coffers that then can be spent for whatever the legislators decide to spend it on?
Well, we can talk about, for example, the lottery. The lottery is about $500 million a year, more or less. But notice that hasn't helped education. Remember when it was first proposed, people said, hey, the lottery's going to save education. You'll never have to worry about education funding again. The lottery in every state has hurt education funding because basically the legislature then does a shell game and shuffles the money that was going to education out of education and says, oh, the lottery should be paying for this. And so you're actually losing more money than you're gaining. And this is so basic. It's in every study. It's in the World Book Encyclopedia. So when I talk to my friends in the National Education Association, I say, look, just send the kids down to the library, the 1994 supplement of the World Book Encyclopedia. Encyclopedia says the lotteries are not helping education. They're hurting education. The funding in real dollars has been going down for years and years and years.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of controversy about this initially because it was sold as a benefit to education. The money just went into the general fund, and then at one point the legislature had to say, okay, okay. So then they actually did something that where the money from the lottery would directly go into education funding. But as you say, the argument is that that doesn't mean that that money plus extra money was going, that just meant that they were putting less money into funding the school.
Yeah, people should be outraged by what's been going on with this gambling. And it benefits the gambling interests. It benefits the casino owners. It benefits the owners of the machines. Let me give you one other statistic, which is a great way to visualize this. Most of the gambling or the rapid gambling comes out of the video gambling machines, the slot machines, which are now electronic. So we call them electronic gambling devices or EGDs. Mm-hmm. Every one of those on average takes in $100,000 per year per machine. Now, that's money that's not going to buy cars, refrigerators, food, and clothes. And that's basically translates into a lost consumer multiplier effect of about $300,000 in lost consumer spending. That's one lost job per year per slot machine. And that, by the way, is why the gambling industry is pushing these slot machines. According to the U.S. Federal Commission, the National Gambling Impact Study Commission, sponsored by Senator Paul Simon, these gambling machines are known as the crack cocaine of creating new addicted gamblers. And then we as taxpayers have to pick up the social and economic costs of these new addicted gamblers. And the Federal Commission also found that around these gambling facilities, once you bring them in, if you bring in a Danville casino, in the areas around there, you're going to see a whole new addicted population addicted to gambling. Now, some people are going to get hooked no matter what, but what the proximity of the gambling machines hooks and doubles the number of addicted gamblers. And it's like drug addiction, and people need to think of it like drug addiction. It's recognized in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, published by the American Psychiatric Association, as a recognized addictive behavior. This is really something that people need to get refocused on, and legislators as well.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is John Kent. He's professor of business administration in the College of Business here at the U of I. And this is something that has been a concern of his for a long time. He's done a lot of writing on, and that is the impact of gambling and the expansion of gambling. And his argument that it's not a good thing for governments to do as a revenue source. At least it's not free money.
Well, I wouldn't put it on Professor Kent, because there are a lot of contributors to this. And yes, I've been talking about this, but I just saw one of our old colleagues who came back from another university, Professor Earl Grinnells, was back here a couple of days ago. He did a definitive report just a couple of years ago, published by Harvard and MIT. And it showed that around these gambling facilities, the crime rate goes up 10% on average, the third year after you open them up, and continues up after that. The taxpayers are paying for this. And so you see increased crime rates going up as people get hooked on the gambling. We talked about the addicted gambling already. They lose their property, and they resort to crime, mostly white-collar crime, but it's still crime that we have to pay for as taxpayers. Yeah. So we have these large socioeconomic costs. And again, in sworn testimony before Congress, looking at all of these studies, we find that the costs are $3, $4, $5 for every $1 in benefits. The lobbyists are going to focus on that $1 in benefits. Oh, we're going to send a little to charity here. We're going to help out over here. But the costs are passed along to all of us.
Yeah. We have a caller here, and others are welcome. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Here's caller in Urbana, line one.
Yeah, interesting topic. I was wondering if you could comment on the parallels of gambling and deregulation laws versus or with financial services regulation and deregulation historically. I wonder if you see intersections or parallels there.
Well, I think it's a better comparison to talk about it in a social type of issue rather than a financial regulation type of issue, although there are some of those parallels. For our listeners, let's talk about, for example, legalizing heroin or legalizing methamphetamines or legalizing cocaine. That's a better illustration of what we do when we legalize gambling, because those are addictive behaviors. Everybody knows that the social costs are enormous. Now, you can find plenty of companies out there that say, look, we'll take all the impurities out of those drugs. We'll make jobs. We'll contribute to charity. We'll put money in the tax coffers. But the reason you don't legalize heroin and cocaine is because everybody knows instinctively, and the studies have shown this for years and years, that the social costs are absolutely enormous. Now, the lobbyists will say, well, we'll regulate it. We'll regulate it and we'll tax it. Well, but that's just not going to work with something that has such enormous social costs. It's simply bad legal policy. It's bad governmental policy. It's poor ethics.
Well, I don't know if that has gotten to the question of the caller. We'll go on here. In any case, to somebody on a cell phone, this is line two. Hello.
Yes. For years, I've thought that when they first brought in the gambling casinos, I thought this is a very regressive tax strategy. And I was wondering if the statistics show that it's flat or is it regressive? Who's gambling and who's paying this tax to the state concerning the lottery, especially concerning the lottery?
Yeah, great question. Every academic out there worth his or her salt will tell you that it's a regressive tax on the poor. This is simply and lotteries in particular. Now, let me back up for a second and say we haven't had widespread gambling in this country through most of the 20th century. It was criminalized 100 years ago by the Teddy Roosevelt generation, the progressives who got out there and they said, look, this is creating new addicted gamblers. It's creating new bankruptcies. It's creating new crime. They didn't have the sophisticated modeling that we have today, but they knew instinctively and by their savvy that this was lose-lose for everybody. And so even though we had widespread legal gambling after the American Civil War, within a few short years, the Teddy Roosevelt generation criminalized it. And they criminalized it not just in local ordinances and state statutes. They criminalized it in state constitutional provisions. And Illinois had one of those. And so the lobbyists said, how do we bring gambling back to America? Well, they had to get passed all those safeguards. And the way they did that is they said, look, the lotteries are going to save education, and so let's change your constitutions. Let's get rid of this anti-gambling safeguard that's in your state constitution. And so that was the one vote that people had, and a lot of people voted to so-called help education by eliminating the safeguards against gambling and eliminating this constitutional or state constitutional safeguard. And so those have fallen by the way. But the real money is coming out of the gambling machines. And as a matter of fact, less people gamble on the lottery once you bring in the casinos and the gambling machines, because it's all about how fast you can gamble. And these machines are known, again, by the experts, by the psychological and psychiatric communities as the crack cocaine of creating new addicted gamblers. And if we put a casino over in Danville, and what legislator wants to be remembered as the legislator who brought a casino to their area? I mean, what kind of a legacy do you want to be remembered for, bringing a casino to your community? And so if we have that here, we in Champaign-Urbana will be the prime feeder market for that casino. You're going to see buses lined up outside the fraternities, the sororities. They're going to have free transportation, free poker chips initially, and all kinds of enticements to get our students over to these gambling facilities. Students are going to say, we want to explore, we want to do this. But there are plenty of instances where students have lost their tuition monies. We're showing by the national studies that young people are already showing the double the adult addiction rate to gambling. And so a whole new generation of addicted gamblers is coming online.
Let's talk with another caller. Again, somebody on a cell phone here, line one. Hello.
Hi. My question was more one of, you're talking about gambling machines and you're talking about other things that are bringing people into the gambling market. I think that there's a lot of online gambling that's going on right now, especially among college students. I, being somebody who just graduated, there are a lot of backroom poker games, but there also is a lot of online gambling, and I don't know necessarily what or how having a casino is really going to affect that, because I think a lot of the people that have that addictive personality and want to get into gambling do so online, where you're probably going to wind up with the same types of costs in the long run, but you're not going to get the benefits of the tax dollars like you were talking about with two callers previous. Well, I'm happy to listen off the air.
Okay.
Sure. Well, let me put this caller's question into context. First of all, it's illegal to gamble online. It's a federal crime to gamble online. And that was passed under what was called the Wire Act in 1961. Robert F. Kennedy, the Attorney General, the brother of President John F. Kennedy, passed the Wire Act in 1961 to fight organized crime. And it said that gambling over the wires was illegal. The U.S. Justice Department still interprets today that that extends to the Internet. And so that has been the official position of the U.S. government for, well, basically since 1961, and with the advent and invention of the Internet. The U.S. National Gambling Impact Study Commission looked at this in 1999 and said, yes, we need to keep it criminal. Why? Because it simply opens up the entire Internet to a host of organized crime and terrorism problems, all kinds of problems that are associated with gambling on the Internet. The National Commission also called for sanctions to make the enforcement easier to prevent gambling on the Internet. But the caller makes a great point, and that's that a lot of people don't know that gambling on the Internet is illegal. And there are many groups out there which are doing free gambling sites to try and get the public conditioned. Now, free gambling sites, if there's nothing to be won or lost, are technically legal. But that is a conditioning factor, and many of these groups are lobbying to get gambling on the Internet legalized. Now, in 2006, a bill was passed through Congress and signed into law called the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, and I testified before Congress at the hearings on this, and actually, I know listeners are probably thinking, well, he's pretty onto these issues. You should have heard the Justice Department and the other people talking about the downside of gambling on the Internet. It was frightening, and I learned quite a few things sitting there listening to the testimony and talking to the experts afterwards. And so it's even more illegal, if that's the proper way to phrase it, than it has been for years and years, and the enforcement mechanisms have been intensified. Now, that having been said, Barney Frank, who has now taken over chairmanship of the Financial Services Committee, is trying to legalize gambling on the Internet. And he's been pushing this. And 80% of the Congress voted to make the sanctions more enforceable. They voted to strengthen the enforcement provisions against gambling on the Internet. And they did that in 2006, bipartisan, Republicans, Democrats, after almost 10 years of congressional hearings and listening to the experts. And now Barney Frank is trying to roll this back. Well, it just kind of boggles the mind that when 80% of the Congress votes against his position, he thinks he has enough power now to actually reverse this and make gambling on the Internet legal. I find that a bit disturbing after you've had 10 years of good social policy hearings and listening to the experts to pass good legislation.
We're at our midpoint here. Let me just introduce again our guest, John Kent. He's professor of business administration here at the University of Illinois within the College of Business. He has, for something like 20 years, been doing research on the societal business economic impacts of legalized gambling activities. And he is the senior editor of the United States International Gambling Report series, a huge series of three volumes. He's brought one of them here with him, and it's
looks nice, doesn't it?
You could do step aerobics with this, which brings together the work that has been done by many academics all across the country looking at the social impacts of legal gambling. So if you're interested in pursuing it at that level, you can seek this out. Otherwise, questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Just to come back to the point that one point the caller raised, and I'm sure that some people would, they would make this argument that says something like, well, people are going to gamble. They're going to take whatever opportunities there are. Some of those may be legal, some of those may be illegal, and that we might as well give them an opportunity to do it if they're going to do it anyway, benefit, take whatever benefit we can, and also that that should somewhat undercut illegal gambling as well.
Yeah, those are common arguments that are made by the lobbyists, and the lobbyists say, look, let's regulate it and tax it.
Right.
Well, the Federal Commission looked at this back in 1999, and by the way, one of these books are dedicated to Senator Paul Simon and others who've worked on this over the years. Senator Paul Simon, great guy. So these arguments are made all the time, but take, for example, the internet gambling. At the recent hearings on this, where Barney Frank was trying to legalize internet gambling, members of Congress spoke up and they said, look, we've been fighting this for years. There is a $100 million lobbying campaign out here to legalize something that we just declared even more illegal a couple of years ago. Now, my question is, where is that $100 million coming from? You've got an illegal activity. And basically, people who are doing it are gambling offshore, so they're gambling overseas. Mm-hmm. These sites are located overseas, and they're trying to avoid U.S. jurisdiction. Question is, and you're talking about members of Congress, Spencer Baucus, member of Congress, a great gentleman, a very onto this issue. He says there's a $100 million lobbying campaign going on to legalize this. Now, if you're talking about an illegal activity, where's that money coming from? Who's generating that $100 million lobbying campaign? And it's probably more than that. The amount of money is enormous. But you will hear Spencer Baucus and those people testifying before Congress who will say, look, you have gambling on the internet, and you've just put the very worst form of electronic gambling in every living room, at every work desk, and at every school desk.
Mm.
And you're going to see kids and young people and adults getting hooked. You're going to see this addictive behavior, this addiction spreading, and we're all going to pay a terrible price for that. And it will actually destabilize internet business.
Champagne caller here is next. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Your advocacy of your cause is tremendous. I mean, you're very fervent and really into it. The problem I got is that gambling is the nature of our society, the nature of our whole economy. If you talk about losses at gambling, the biggest loss in gambling over the last 2 years are all the poor souls have lost fortunes in the stock market. And we for surely wouldn't want to eliminate that, would we? And I don't laugh about that. There's been trillions of dollars lost in the economy in the last year in the stock market. But that's supported by the government. It's taxed. It's regulated. It's you know, we do not turn our shoulder on gambling. Everybody who goes out to start a business in this country gambles on the success of what they do. I understand that the problem with casinos are it's all front-loaded. The casinos are guaranteed their profit, and the state takes a cut of that profit. And I would 100% agree with you that the state should be taxing those casinos at a lot higher rate because their profit is guaranteed, because the slot machines are only going to pay out 90% on a dollar, and that's a guarantee. It's not like the stock market where you really are gambling. You have no idea what the future holds in the stock market. With a slot machine, you absolutely know that 90% is going to be returned to the gamblers. The casino is going to get 10%. So the state should be taxing that at a very high rate because the casinos have a guaranteed income from every slot machine. But to stand there and take this advocacy that gambling is so bad when you're looking at it in such a narrow scope, you're redefining a culture that has made the United States the way it is. We are a gambling society. We are people who like to gamble. We like to take chances. We like to know that business we're starting may make us millionaires and it may make us paupers. But we're willing to take that chance. And everybody goes into a casino knows that the slot machines are only going to return 90% of the dollar. Everybody who buys a daily lotto ticket knows that they're only going to get 50 cents back on their dollar. But that thrill of gambling is part of America. And you talk about drugs and drugs and drugs, but you're comparing apples and oranges. Drugs are a different problem than gambling. Liquor is just as serious an issue as heroin. There are more people who die in this country, I guarantee, because of accidents caused by illegal driving when they're drunk than die because of heroin addiction. But again, we regulate it, we tax it, we police it, we do the best we can with it. But you can't deny human nature. And the United States is not a very big gambling country. Australians gamble a whole lot more than Americans gamble. And there are a number of other countries that gamble a lot higher rates than the Americans gamble. Macau is now the biggest gambling capital of the world. It's not Las Vegas. It's in China. People gamble all over the world. To try to ignore gambling or try to blame people for gambling or put this black spot on gambling is to ignore human nature and the way we live as a society.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I'm talking about the socioeconomics here, not the ethical issues that you've raised. But let's differentiate here between business risk. That's why we go to school. That's why we have business colleges. That's why we analyze stocks. That's why we analyze investments. Education will work to help you with business risk. And it's great. Yes, the American psyche is to be entrepreneurial, to go out there and make that money, to make those decisions and to get into a business, to come up with some new ideas and to make that money. Gambling is an artificial risk. And advocates are calling, and several different groups are calling for hearings in state legislatures and in Congress on how these machines work. People should ask if these slot machines, which create an artificial risk as distinguished from a business risk, are fair. Are people being treated fairly? Your caller says, you know, when you put in a dollar into a slot machine, you're going to get 90% back. Well, that's the first time. The next time you put it in, you're going to be minus another 10% and another 10% and another 10%. And the goal of the casinos, if you even watch the movie Casino, they say this right in there. Eventually, they get it all. And that's the goal. It's called gambling to extinction. They even call it that, gambling to extinction. What does that say about their clientele? And so we need to decide if we're going to be a gambling economy like Nevada, which, by the way, has even worse financial problems than the state of Illinois has right now, or if we're going to be a consumer economy. Now, the other thing that the caller raised is if we're looking at the financial markets, think about what gambling is based on. There's no product being produced. And after the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act was passed here in the United States, internet gambling stocks, which were on the London Stock Exchange, collapsed. There was like $8 billion lost almost instantly. Well, why? There's nothing backing it up. It's pure speculation. Now, if we extend that to the world economy and start looking at gambling stocks everywhere, which are really based on nothing but how much money you can take out of people playing slot machines, you've got a destabilizing factor. And we were talking about regulation earlier. You've got a destabilizing factor in economies, in financial institutions. This is the new subprime crisis, which is waiting to happen because it's based on nothing. At least in the subprime crisis, you had some real estate out there. With gambling, what have you got? You basically have nothing but people who enjoy going in and dropping money into their slot machines.
I just want to get back to it for a second, and I have another caller I want to get to here. You talked about a little bit earlier about the 3-to-1 cost benefit ratio. That is, yes, government may take in a dollar from legalized gambling, but associated with that, there are going to be $3, maybe more, $4 in costs that they're actually going to have to pay. I'm sure that there is some very detailed sort of way of figuring that out. But how do you come up with a number like that?
Well, first of all, I'm not coming up with those numbers. This is a summary of the studies, the reputable studies over the last 20 years, and they're given in tables and charts before Congress in sworn testimony. And you know what? You're not going to put these numbers before Congress under oath unless you can document these numbers. But we talk about what are called, and it's a great question. We talk about what are called the ABCs. The A stands for new addicted gamblers. They double around gambling facilities. It's similar to drug addiction. The B stands for new bankruptcies, up 18% to 42%. People lose their money. We have personal, professional, and business bankruptcies. People get hooked on this. They lose all their money. They embezzle from their employers. And the C stands for the new crime. We already talked about Professor Grinnell's and his Harvard-MIT study, which took almost 10 years to do, analyzed before and after, including the Illinois casinos and the Illinois gambling facility jurisdictions. And it showed that on average, the crime rate goes up about 10% per year after these facilities come in. And so you've got all these socioeconomic costs that are associated with this, and these are increased costs on the taxpayers. Now, added to that are the costs of dumping money into slot machines instead of dumping money into the consumer economy. Mm-hmm. We need to pump prime the economy. And let me give you a great example. Omaha, Nebraska was approached about 10 years ago. They had a failing racetrack, and every proposal that's going on in Springfield right now was proposed for Omaha, Nebraska. Let's build a casino. Let's save the racetrack. Let's put in video gambling machines. Right across the river in Council Bluffs, Iowa, there are two casinos up going already. We need to counteract that. They're taking our money. Instead, Omaha, Nebraska said, no, we're not going to do it. They bulldozed down the racetrack, and they built a high-tech office park, an extension of the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and they have about a half a billion dollars in private investments in townhouses, new shopping facilities going up on this old racetrack site. They said, no, that is a vibrant, developing economy. And so the proposal is, it wouldn't take a whole lot to just transform the casinos we have into schools and high-tech facilities like Omaha, Nebraska did. And one final thought, in Canada, the same companies that are managing the casinos here in the United States are managing the casinos in Canada. But in Canada, the tax rate is virtually 100%. The gambling companies are paid a management fee. Here in Illinois, the tax rate is about 15% on the casinos. And so we have all these social costs. So if you're going to have the gambling, at least tax the casinos, make them pay for part of the social costs that they are generating throughout this economy. You know, if the governor wants to raise a few billion dollars quickly, raise the taxes on the casinos. And if they decide that they want to leave, that's fine. We'll change them into schools.
Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, is John Kent. He's professor of business administration here at the University of Illinois for a long time now, something like 20 years. He's been doing research on the impact of legal gambling here in the United States, something that has expanded significantly over that period of time. He is the senior editor of the United States International Gambling Report series in three volumes that takes a look at the impact of gambling on national security, on the economy, and something that is the product of a great deal of research by an awful lot of people.
Well, let me just reiterate. I mean, you talk about Professor Kent here, but there are a lot of people who have been associated with this and this research over the last 20 years. We're looking at really authoritative academics and just top-flight economists and legal policy personnel from all across the country and indeed throughout the world. Australia was mentioned. I don't even want to get into Australia, but there's quite a backlash going on in Australia against the gambling in Australia and in Macau.
Yeah, okay. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk next with someone in Urbana. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, you've, I think, drawn the distinction between business and gambling. The essential difference being, of course, that in gambling, no new wealth is created. It's simply one person taking from another. And there's the same amount of wealth at the beginning as there is in the end, or perhaps a little less. In business, it's not necessary that anyone is a winner or a loser, but both may be winners. And new wealth, if it's successful, new wealth is created. And most of the time, that's what happens. I know I've had a friend who insisted that her husband went out and put a crop in each year and was taking a big gamble. It wasn't a gamble. It was a risk. New wealth was created. And I think that's the difference we must see. The other thing was about the previous caller talking about it being human nature. Well, there are lots of things people do apparently by human nature that we have outlawed, murder being one, various other unpleasant antisocial acts being others. It isn't necessary that we condone what may be human nature.
All right.
Well, I think this gentleman is put it very concisely and correctly and much better than I did.
All right. Well, I want to thank the caller. And to continue, we'll go next to someone in Coles County on our toll-free line. This is line four. Hello.
Yes. I just want to make a quick comment. I am strongly opposed to gambling, very strongly opposed to gambling myself, philosophically and otherwise. But I do think that nearly all forms of gambling should be made legal, should be legalized, should be heavily taxed by the government and regulated and taxed. Because, you know, in my opinion, it's simply impossible to legislate morality. And if the government needs a lot of additional revenue, which of course it does, what better way to get it than from the goofy characters who seem addicted to gambling? That's all.
All right. Well, okay. Again, you have spoken to that point before. I guess you can do it again, as I'm sure that there are some number of people who would say just what the caller did. They say, you know, people are going to do it. Why not take advantage of their interest and tax that and use as a form of revenue?
Well, I can see that as an argument if the benefits outweigh the costs. But as we've said over and over again, all the reputable studies, all the good academic studies, and we need to distinguish those from the PR studies that are financed by the gambling interests. And they provide them with great PR, and they've got lots of money to take some disreputable study that they've already financed. They're like tobacco. You know, they'll say smoking's good for you. Well, gambling's good for you. And you'll see these so-called studies appear, and they're backed by a lot of PR dollars. But the reputable studies simply show that the costs overwhelm the benefits. And so if we're going to be involved in good government and economic development, we want to reduce our costs. We want to have benefits greater than the costs, not the opposite.
All right. To someone on the campus, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I was calling to ask Dr. Ken a question.
Yes.
I do understand that gambling may be bad for you and the costs do outweigh the benefits, but the way that I look at it is, like the caller said before, is that if it is outlawed or prohibited, it may work the same way as alcohol. You have more underground crime. And at the same time, I can't really see the cost outweighing the benefits because there are more people being employed, and it's basically like a redistribution of wealth. Can you speak to that, Professor Kent?
Well, I think we've addressed some of those arguments already. When you say the redistribution of wealth, where's the wealth going? It's going back to Nevada. It's going to Macau to build new casinos there. And one reason those casinos are being built in Macau is because of the anti-gambling backlash that's been going on here in the United States. The companies have decided that it's easier to build in these foreign jurisdictions than it is here in the United States. So they were looking at their cost benefits, and they were saying, look, we're running into all this opposition. Let's go build these things overseas. People tend to be a bit libertarian. I have a libertarian streak myself. We don't like to be told what to do. But good government simply says, look, We've had gambling banned in this country for 100 years. Look at Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, he got rid of the ban on alcohol, but he kept the ban on gambling because he knows that you can't, and he knew, and economists know, you can't gamble your way to prosperity. We need to encourage people to direct their efforts into entrepreneurial, wealth-creating, product-creating, service-creating activities, which benefits everybody. And as President Kennedy used to say, a rising tide lifts all boats. Gambling is just the opposite. Gambling is like throwing gasoline on the fires of the recession. We're making everything worse when we keep dumping money into more and more gambling. Gambling is not going to save you. You can't gamble your way to prosperity.
We did, you know, an earlier caller did, though, make the reference to some of the social problems that are associated with alcohol. And I suppose that some people would point to just the case that you did. They say, look, prohibition was a failure, that you cannot make this illegal. What you do is get the impulse to drink channeled into the underground economy, all kinds of crime associated with it. And they would say the same thing about gambling. You just can't You can't stamp it out. You can't make it illegal. You might as well control and regulate.
That argument is heard all the time, and it was before the U.S. Federal Commission. They heard a lot of expert testimony on this. They heard from the lobbyists. They heard from the people from Nevada. There were a lot of people who were gambling executives on this U.S. National Gambling Impact Study Commission. And initially, they voted unanimously for a moratorium on the expansion of any type of gambling anywhere in the United States, because they knew this. Let me bring up one other. So I think a better comparison is to drugs, to heroin, to crack cocaine. That people can see that a little better than talking about alcohol or tobacco. Those are comparisons which have been made and pretty much rejected by the experts. And all of these points, let me just assure the listeners that all of these points have been raised in these federal commissions and in this U.S. National Gambling Impact Study Commission and in the U.S. International Gambling Report. They have been looked at from every conceivable angle, and I'm simply reporting what those conclusions are, and they're quite negative on this. Let me give you one other quick thing here. In 2005, the people of Illinois have forgotten, but in 2005, we had a bunch of experts from the University of Illinois and elsewhere who went in and testified in Springfield before the House Administration Committee on a bill to recriminalize the casinos here in Illinois. And there were 9 members on that committee. Even a member who had a casino in his district voted in favor of the bill, 8-1. So the vote was 8-1 in favor. It went to the floor of the House for a vote. It passed 67-42 to recriminalize the casinos. It was very simple. It said, we're going to get rid of the casinos here in Illinois, and if any jobs are lost, they have to do the retraining. Let me show you how profitable this is. Casinos, once they are built, get back their return on investment. Everything that they put in, $100 million, usually in the first year of operation. No other business can bring in that kind of money. Now, why do they bring in that kind of money? Because they're dealing with an addictive behavior. And we see that about 2/3 of the money going into the casinos is coming out of people who have problems with gambling. They're in the process of losing everything. And a certain percentage of those problem gamblers will become addicted gamblers. They'll lose everything and create these large social problems. You know, I could make a whole lot of money if I were to change my position on this. But that would be academically dishonest. And myself and a lot of my colleagues don't take any honorarium or consultant fees for any of this, talking on these issues. As a matter of fact, this U.S. International Gambling Report, any author or editorial financial returns go straight to charity. So we just talk about this on the pure academics. But yes, the temptations are for academics. The money is out there, and the temptation is for them to go over, as we say, to the dark side.
In 2005, did the Senate vote on that proposal to close down the casinos?
Yeah, good question. It was killed procedurally because our then governor, who will remain nameless at this point, didn't want that on his desk. So procedurally, the bill was killed. But on a fair debate in the House and in committee, it came out a 67-42 vote to get rid of the casinos here. And there's an alternative. That alternative is if they don't want to pay taxes and they want to leave, change them into educational facilities. We do this with the Olympics all the time. You have the Olympics come to the area, and then you're left with all these empty dorms and empty cafeterias. You change them into schools.
We have just a few minutes left. We have some other callers. Let's get back to that. And Champagne is next, line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. I believe that there should be limits on how many gambling casinos there are. Definitely, they shouldn't be on the internet. But I think to eliminate them entirely is going to bring in a lot of crime. And then I also believe that with tight regulations on that money that comes from the casinos, it's supposed to be for education, to go to rehabilitating children that are in dysfunctional families and who are having trouble in school. That's the root of a lot of the problem. You need to strengthen egos in children, so it needs to start early on. I also had clients when I was a case manager who lost all of their savings, elderly people who were buying into the shopping networks on TV. So that was an addiction also. You've got a lot of these things. So you really have to strengthen people.
Comment?
Well, I think we've addressed most of those comments already, and she raises some interesting points about the social costs of certain types of activities. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about here, bottom line, is what are the social and economic costs versus the benefits? And we can actually put numbers on a lot of that. And we've shown that those costs are $3, $4, $5 for every $1 in benefits. But she did raise again, as some of your previous callers have, the issue of crime. Now, the report out of Harvard and MIT talks about basically about white-collar crime, property crimes, people lose their money, and around gambling facilities, the crime rate goes up 10% per year, every year. Well, she also raised the question about other types of crime. I remember back in 1995 sitting before this congressional committee, and Senator Paul Simon was there. This was the establishment of the National Commission. And they brought in a former member of organized crime from Chicago in the witness protection program, put him behind protective screens and had him testifying before Congress about these crime issues. And he says, look, you're not reducing crime when you bring in gambling facilities. You're creating new opportunities for organized crime. And I'm soft peddling this, but if you read these congressional hearings, if you read what these members of the criminal element are saying about this, it is very disparaging to the expansion and the legalization of gambling activities.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop. My apologies. We have a couple of callers we can't take. We're simply at the end of the time. Our guest is John Kent. He's professor of business administration within the College of Business at the U of I, senior editor of the U.S. International Gambling Report series, and someone who has done a lot of research in this area. Not the only one, but one of many academics across the country.
Quite many.
Done a lot of work on this subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Always glad to be here.